Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Tanner Stewart. Not the Tanner Stewart from YouTube, but the Tanner Stewart from Stewart Farms. He's the co-founder and CEO of Stewart Farms, which is a Canadian company that's building a state-of-the-art indoor aquaponics facility to grow organic, sustainable cannabis. Thanks for joining us today, Tanner.
Thanks for having me, man. Excited to be here.
Yeah, no, super excited. You know, you have your own YouTube channel as well and documenting your journey. But let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
So I'm here in New Brunswick, Canada, which is just north of Maine. I'm literally in a border town called St. Stephen, New Brunswick, and literally across the river from me is Calais, Maine. So you can the river is about 200 feet wide. So this is quite a unique place to be building our indoor vertical automated aquaponics farm. For kind of a little more geographical reference, we're 6 hours from Boston, 9 hours north of New York, straight shot on the I-95. As soon as you cross the border into Canada on the I-95, you're basically at my farm. You're about 5 minutes from it at that point. So
Definitely, you know, indoor is the necessity there. So it's a good thing that's what you're into, because otherwise this time of year, there's no getting past it, you know. Man, I remember two things, you know, if you're right there, you know, it's just super cold and Stephen King. Those are the two things I know about me.
Yeah. We've got lots of lobster here and clams and yes, and it's cold and humid.
No pet cemeteries though, right?
No pets. Well, there's a few pet cemeteries.
Yeah. None that bring people back to life, hopefully.
Yeah. They just don't get up at night.
Yeah. Good. So cool. So tell me a little bit about, you know, Stewart Farms and, you know, what you guys are doing there.
Yeah. So, you know, the vision of what Stewart Farms is today really started January 1st, 2018, but it platformed off of my previous 5 years in the indoor vertical aquaponics farming industry. So I actually started in indoor farming out in Alberta, Canada, which is just north of Montana. And I got into indoor farming for food at that time. So I got invited to invest in a company called Nutroponics Canada. And I got brought to see their prototype farm that was on a farm, ironically, in a garage on a farm. I went into this place, and there was an 8x8 module cube in this room, in this garage. And then there was a small fish tank, a few fish tanks and some filters, and the water was feeding the spinach and kale and arugula that was growing in this 8x8x8 cube. And there was multiple layers in it. This was really my first moment of introduction to the whole concept of, you know, vertically stacked farming indoors. And then having a land-based fish farm that's feeding, supplying the nutrient for these plants. But as soon as I saw it, and the guys who had originally got this thing up and going and had built this prototype, you know, they explained it to me. They said, you know, it's a closed loop or semi-closed loop system. It's all about sustainability. And, you know, we're farming fish, and we're taking a waste stream that would normally be just a waste stream, and we're providing high density nutrients, macro and micronutrients, to these vegetables, and it makes them taste amazing. And there's no herbicides, no pesticides, and no synthetic nutrients. And that was, you know, because I'm from the East Coast, I love fish by default. So the fish farming part, you know, got me really excited, as excited as I was about the plant growing side of it. So I was just all in right at that very moment. I instantly fell in love with the concept. You know, from a high level, I understood that from a sustainability perspective, you know, when you're talking about indoor agriculture in general, You know, it matters where your energy is coming from. It matters what your inputs are. But I instantly recognized that there's a massive need and an ongoing need for clean fish production. I mean, I'm sure you've heard the oceans are full of plastic. There's more plastic in the ocean than fish as we sit here today. Microplastics are in almost every piece of seafood we eat. And that's just how it is now. You know, they're finding plastic bags in Mariana Trench. In Mariana's Trench, and we haven't even started, you know, we haven't even got into, you know, mass overfishing in the oceans, mass die-offs, and everything else that we pour into the ocean, agriculture runoff, you know, hormones, prescription drugs coming out through our sewage, you know, into our water supply. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, this is that's all going into our seafood, man. So I was like, okay, well, we're going to need a reliable source of clean and as sustainably produced as possible fish protein from this moment forward. And same thing on the leafy green side. I realized that, you know, that's a very spoilable crop, and being able to get it to the consumer quickly is good because you have less spoilage, especially when you're talking leafy greens and microgreens. They go bad very quickly. And when you're farming certain crops outside, they're extremely susceptible to climate. And, you know, we don't need to get into the whole climate change thing because that's all anybody hears about every day on the news and on the radio and pretty much every piece of media going right now. You know, so it's not that things can't be farmed outside. It's that we're losing crops, monocrops, all over the world every day, whether you're talking fish farming in the ocean or you're talking vegetable farming, strawberries, you name it. So we're pouring all these chemicals, you know, onto these crops. And then these weather events are happening. We're losing them all. And then we're starting over. So you know, our the energy and the environmental impact that we're putting towards, you know, a lot of this outdoor agriculture, depending on how fragile the crop is going nowhere, right? So our waste is increasing exponentially, and our impact is remaining the same or increasing for less yield overall, lesser results. So, you know, for all those reasons, instantly fell in love with it. So we're about 6.5 years later. So January 1st, 2018, I was sitting on my back porch, looking at the river in my hometown of Miramichi, New Brunswick, smoking a joint. and you know, I'd been watching the Canadian cannabis industry kind of pass by me for the last 4 years at this point. And you know, I love leafy greens now, but you know, I've really been digging into leafy greens for about 5 years or 5 or 6 years to date. But I've been smoking weed for 18 years, man. Yeah. And I love cannabis. So I decided to keep going, in the vertical aquaponics, with the vertical aquaponics methodology and the sustainability mindset. And as I was looking at the Canadian LP licensed producer landscape, you know, I think at the time there was like 112 licensed producers, and two or three of them were, you know, focused on organic or even remotely anything to do with sustainability. And I'm just looking at that going, what is going on, right? Like we're building this brand new industry, and we're just going to start in the position that we need to get out of as a new industry. So I just saw this huge gap. So I decided to lean in big time and really bring all those principles that had been at this time, you know, permanently etched into me during my time at Nutraponics, and bring that into the cannabis industry. Keep going.
Oh, that's amazing. There's so much to build there because, you know, you talked about, first of all, you know, the environment, talking about sustainability, and, you know, it seems almost like a joke a lot of times where it's like, oh yeah, straws, you know, save the turtles. You know, and it's like there's islands of plastic, and, you know, we don't, you know, I think there's, you know, being in the cannabis industry, there's so much stigma, and, you know, there's so much misinformation and so much education still needs to be done. And the same thing with, on that side, with sustainability, with agriculture, you know, and what people are putting in their bodies, you know, where it's almost like, you know, these extremes where people are either like, you know, staunch, you know, vegan and this, and you know, everybody can eat whatever, however they want, but people are, you know, very militant about it or very educated about it and, you know, wanting to spread that. And then on the other side, there's people who just don't care what they're putting in their body or they're not thinking about it. And obviously I don't want to generalize everybody into two different categories, but you know, to you know, the food that people are putting in and how it's getting there, you know, so much more education has come from that. And the same thing, like, you know, go.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, exactly to your point, it's unbelievably overwhelming for any consumer to have to worry about all these things. I was actually watching a George Carlin piece just earlier this morning, actually, and he's talking about exactly this. He's talking about, you know, vegans and environmental sustainability and how crazy we are, you know, as a human race. And really his main point was, you know, we don't even know how to look after ourselves yet. How are we gonna save the planet? And I mean, you know, from your most staunch environmentalist to the complete opposite of that, to just the average person who is just trying to live, right? They're trying to look after their families. They're trying to earn a living and they don't have the convenience. And this is the majority of the world. They don't have the convenience or the finances or the time or the brain or the capacity to think about these things, to worry about, you know, GMOs in our cereal. They're just buying cereal that they can afford for their kids, right? And you know, it's really not fair, in my opinion, to the consumer to have to worry about all of these overwhelming things and to try to make meat eaters feel bad because they're not vegans. I think it's just up to industry as a whole. You know, it's up to industry as a whole, across all industries. It's up to all industries to internalize the need to become less wasteful, to manage, you know, we should get rid of plastic straws, right? But we shouldn't shove that down the consumer's throat. We should just get rid of plastic straws as you know, retailers and fast food chains and you know, and that opens up a whole new industry for producers of biodegradable plastic straws that are not made of plastic. So, and all of that is happening right now. I think it's just really important for the producers of consumer packaged goods to be addressing these issues, because you know, every, you know, it's like that old thing there that the, you know, we've heard it, you know, you and I probably heard it our whole lives, you know, vote with your dollar. You know, vote with your dollar.
I took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, man.
No, come on. That's great. I love it. You know, that's the only, that's the main power we have as consumers, is vote with your dollars. Where are you going to put your money? And the companies, you know, the bigger companies, that's, you know, it's almost become a marketing tactic. You know, the sustainability, you know, is a buzzword, you know, just like green was, you know, 10 years ago. And just like, you know, the biodegradable straws, everything like this. It's become a marketing tactic, and you know what? Yeah. Good, let it be, because this way, at least these companies are, you know, making a difference and shaving off some of that, you know, the impact, negative impact that they're having, little by little.
Exactly, but when you tell consumers to vote with their dollar, and they don't have affordable options to vote with their dollar, then you're pretty much eliminating like 80 or 90% of the market. So. You know, I agree with that concept whenever a consumer can. And on the other side of it, they almost shouldn't have to. And that's going to require a longer term maneuver of across many, many industries. But I guess back to my original point is that, we as the cannabis industry as a whole, we have this glorious opportunity to come in today, acknowledge all of these issues and put a better foot forward than most of these other consumer packaged goods companies out there. And you know, in most markets across North America, especially, and you know, emerging around the world, we have a window of general higher margins, right? Everybody's talking about the commoditization of cannabis. Well, I was in, you know, California about a month and a half ago, and there was still lots of $20 a gram strains in many, many stores. And then there was also, you know, and there was also the lower end ranges too. So we've got higher margins where we can make better choices. So why wouldn't we, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it all, you know, going back to having this opportunity now, because we're building this industry day by day, year by year, right? It's only been 7 years now since Colorado, and you know, and it's a brand new industry that we're building, and you know, coming from the traditional market now into the mainstream. And you know, you said it, you know, there's an aspect of having to regulate ourselves and having to have higher standards and ethics, you know, because now, you know, with the whole vaping, you know, ban on vaping now in Massachusetts, and you know, it's something that bring a black eye to the industry first and foremost, mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, allowing those people who are anti-cannabis, you know, and it's kind of saying, see, this is what's going on, you know, where in fact, you know, we have to regulate ourselves in the same thing, you know, sustainability. You know, we have an ability now to make something from the ground up. So, you know, the people who are, you know, what you're doing, what other people are doing who have higher ethics, you know, whether it be with the cultivation, with what they're putting in their products, they're going to be the ones who stick around the longest, because either the other ones are going to, you know, be banned in the long run, or it's not going to be sustainable, like you say, and you know, or the consumer is going to be a more educated consumer in the long run, and make better choices.
Yeah, and it's a journey. You know, it's a definite journey. One of the first things I realized when we took our leafy greens to market about 4 years ago, when I was with Nutraponics, you know, those leafy greens, that spinach, kale, and arugula, they were not in a sustainable, recyclable package like I wanted them to be. We actually went to market in plastic clamshells because it was our first entry into market, and we were refining our cost of goods sold. And I was heartbroken. Like I was absolutely heartbroken that we were doing that. But we didn't have the economical solution or replacement for that package at that time. So we kind of just did an initial launch to get our product out into the market. And then we continued to work on finding the right biodegradable package to replace it with. Now, coming into Stewart Farms, I have an opportunity to do it right out the gate, which is what we're doing. We're going to go with cans. We're canning our cannabis. We're going to put our so kind of like a tuna can, right? And we're going to nitrogen infuse those cans to preserve the terpenes and preserve the freshness. Everything we do in our farm, we're looking at, you know, the hair nets, the boot covers, anything that is in theory, well, first off, our first rule is try to get nothing that's single use if we can, right? We're not having any temporary throwaway lab coats. Everybody's got smocks and permanent lab coats, and we're doing laundry, right? As an example, anything that we have to throw away or has to be one use, you know, if visitors are putting on what would normally be a latex glove, we are putting a lot of time and energy into finding an alternative to that is biodegradable and recyclable. But we're actually diving into what does that mean, because everything is technically biodegradable, right? So you got to do a lot of homework, right? And it's like, okay, well, if I take this glove and I throw it in the ditch, will it go away in a few years and harm nothing? That's my ultimate goal. Everything that would be single use that comes out of our farm, if you could just throw it in the ditch, you know, or just put it in the woods and it literally goes away and hurts nothing, that's the ultimate, right? Versus versus if it's biodegradable or compostable. And but it's only compostable in an industrial composting facility, and it has to be underground for 5 years at 20 degrees Celsius, 20 degrees. So what would that be in American? 90 that's Fahrenheit? Like, I have no idea.
No, that's way up there. It is. 20 is about 70 degrees, something like that.
Yeah, 72
degrees. 72 degrees Fahrenheit. I was like, 20? Yeah. Damn, that's low. You're up there by Maine and stuff, but woo.
So
we're the only ones who don't use the med ship, you know. So what are you gonna do?
You'll get there. Hey, being a Canadian is we're in the most confusing position ever because I have to know the metric and the imperial system because everything we buy so much from the United States, and in construction you got to switch between millimeters and inches, right? Or you buy I was in the construction industry I still kind of am for the last 13 years, so we got to learn both, but anyways, I digress. So back to the making the right choices. It's definitely a journey, and no cannabis producer or nobody in any business should feel guilty for where they're at today, as long as they have a long-term plan to try to continually improve, right? And because it ultimately it'll come down to economics, right? Yeah. Because you cannot make your consumer pay for 100% of your sustainable decisions, because they won't. And it's not because they don't want to, it's because they can't afford to.
Yeah, we were talking about earlier, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, exactly, so.
Well, that's great. I guess it's just like you were saying, it has to go with, you know, starting somewhere. It's the same thing, you know, just like someone may not be able to afford, you know, the highest level sustainable GMO free organic food, and therefore they have to make poor choices, you know, or not even making poor choices, you know, just a matter of, like you said, economics. You know, not every company that comes in is going to be able to have the highest standards of sustainability as well, you know. But yeah, it's kind of like having that eye on the prize a little bit, and being able to, you know, put money back into your business, put money back into investing into that over time, because that's a branding factor as well. And it's also a matter of, you know, quality and being able to charge more for your products and having a different kind of, you know, market. You know, and target audience and everything like that. And, you know, it kind of takes it away. I think that's where we're trying to go with the industry in general, you know, taking away that stigma of, you know, that stoner. You know, I was seeing somebody, you know, had a post on LinkedIn recently saying, you know, weed's not classy and this and that. And okay, they're trying to, you know, get some engagement on their post and, you know, you know, and get in the algorithm on their side a little bit. So, you know, I see what they're really doing.
Stirring the pot.
And, you know, there were a lot of comments on that post, you know what I mean? So it was great. It was a good idea. But, you know, there is still that stigma, you know, and going away from that and kind of having a, you know, kind of branding our industry as well is, no, man, you kidding me? Like, not only are we, you know, this is a real business, a real industry, and we're, you know, but not only that, but we are on the cutting edge of, you know, sustainability, of taking care of our planet, you know, of the right way. We're giving back to our communities. We're on the front lines of legislation and making sure that people who are affected by drugs and the war on drugs, and they're getting their pieces as well, and not piece, you know, their fair share and everything like that. You know, that's the way that we have to do it all together as an industry. And it just takes time. But when we're coming in and we're, you know, we can't sell ourselves in our industry just right off the bat to people who want to hand out cash and who have success in other sectors, which is great. You know, and, you know, have that middle ground and being able to grow, because there is a lot of money, in obviously in our industry as well.
Yeah, we have there in theory is a better margin to play with when you compare it to any other crop in the world, right? You know, potatoes, right? How hard is it to innovate in a root vegetable? Well, there's not big margins in potatoes, right? Or beets or carrots or anything like that. So I really view, to your point, like I view cannabis as the tip of the spear for agriculture and technology innovation, right? Well, you know, hence in my case, while I'm building an automated vertical farm, right? And when we, as we demonstrate the viability and profitability of an automated multi-layer farm, well, cannabis is a fruiting crop, right? It's a crop. It's an agriculture crop, and it's a fruiting crop. It grows tall, and it grows flower, and it fruits, and it produces, you know, beautiful THC and other cannabinoids that can turn into an unbelievable amount of consumer packaged goods medically and recreationally. But you know, you can take that fruiting crop out, and perhaps the economics will work well for tomatoes in certain jurisdictions, or it'll work well for hops, or, you know, any other viney, tall, nitrogen greedy plant. We'll be able to take that out and put that in our system. And then, you know, in our case, because we're farming fish, well, we'll have this clean source of animal protein that's supplying the nutrients to our cannabis crops. And now, one of the coolest things about aquaponics that I don't think a lot of people know, because a lot of people haven't gotten the chance to eat or smoke weed or eat food out of an aquaponically grown system. But the arugula that I used to grow, as an example, at Nutroponics, it tasted like horseradish because it was so spicy. You know, that's how rocket is supposed to taste, right? But when you go into any grocery store, it's kind of bland and just like dead, right? So you get a longer shelf life out of an aquaponically grown plant. You get higher flavor and aroma profiles, you know, the secondary metabolites in your plants really express themselves. In cannabis, we call that terpenes. So the terp profile in general will be much higher in an aquaponically driven system than for sure a hydroponic system. The only thing you can rightfully compare to an aquaponically grown plant is living soil, right? We are growing plants with living water. Right? So our water that's supplied from our fish farm, it's full of beneficial microbes. And that is what living soil is. So the best living soil, any good soil farmer will say, well, we farm the soil, man, you know, that's how we get a great plant. And, you know, in our case, we just don't have any dirt in our system. And it's all coming from the fish farm. But, you know, so you get a really flavorful product. So that's, you know, and as much as I'd like to hope that everybody cares about how we farm, most people won't, right? You know, they're going to start in the retail store. They're going to grab our product and we're going to price it, to where it should be in the quality chain. We're aiming for high quality. High quality will get a high quality price. If we produce a crap crop or a shitty crop, we'll call it shit crop and we'll sell it for a really cheap price and put it on the market. Because, you know, consumers have to trust you, right? That's kind of number one. But, you know, once they get our product, they have to like it. And then hopefully they'll care about how we farm and our sustainability mission. So.
No, definitely. And, you know, I guess that leads me to my next question is, you know, I guess not so many people are walking into their dispensary, local dispensary, and saying, hey, yo, I want some of that aquaponic shit. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, and I guess that has to do with lack of education, awareness.
Yeah.
How do you kind of, you know, differentiate yourself from the other products in there? How do you kind of bring that awareness up and let people know and educate what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. We are a niche within a niche, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got kind of your organic farmers, and then within that there's this growing contingent of aquaponics farmers, and that's in the food and the cannabis industry. But there is there's another company on the east coast of Canada here called Aqualitas, and they're in Nova Scotia, Canada, and they actually have some of the biggest market share in Nova Scotia right now, which really excites me. We have a good relationship with Aqualitas. Myrna Gillis, the CEO over there, is a friend of mine, and her product speaks for itself. I mean, she's putting out high THC strains, which of course is important to a lot of consumers, and it tastes great. We've got another aquaponics farmer in BC called Habitat on the west coast of Canada, and they're growing some great weed, and they're farming salmon out there. And then and of course we're kind of the third entry into the Canadian market, and we're farming tilapia. Now, one cool thing about our tilapia is we're shipping them to Boston and New York, so that's our American export. We of course cannot legally export cannabis. That will not be happening, if you're listening to anybody who would check us for that. but we're going to be sending organic live tilapia down to the Asian markets in Boston and New York, and that's kind of the byproduct of our cannabis. But anyways, to your point, how do we build an aquaponics awareness? More of us just have to get up and running and put great product on the shelf and get it to consumers, and it has to taste amazing, and it has to last. I truly believe long term terp profiles are gonna ensure that aquaponics growers as a category of cannabis producers, I think we have a really good shot of being the top, as far as flavor profiles go within the cannabis world or the food world. So,
you know, how are you currently, I guess, getting your product out there and, getting it out to the most people?
Yeah. So here in Canada, it's kind of a mixed bag from province to province across the country. In New Brunswick specifically, our client is called Cannabis New Brunswick. So it's actually government-run retail stores. So we have a single client here in New Brunswick. So that's just, gets packaged, goes on a truck, and goes to a single buyer. Out in Alberta, which is basically my two home provinces in Canada, New Brunswick and Alberta. Alberta has the most aggressive private retail infrastructure in all of Canada. I seen an article just the other day. There's only 4.5 million people in Alberta, and there's going to be about 500 private retail outlets in Alberta by about 2021. So there, I still have to sell it to a government entity. Then it gets distributed to those private retailers. They pull it out of the, it's kind of like the liquor board, or, but now it's the cannabis board in Alberta. Brick and mortar is coming online all across Canada. Online retail is different in various jurisdictions, but that's also becoming available. But obviously our main competitor as a whole legal group is the black market, right?
And
the black market,
everywhere,
everywhere, right? And the black market's still killing it. And when we look at,
you talk about margins, they got
they don't have the same requirements for testing and whatnot. But that's who we look at, right? Like I look at the black market for quality. I look at California for quality. I mean, undisputably, California is the world leader in quality cannabis, as far as I'm concerned. Well, at least everything I smoked for the 2 weeks I was there.
Yeah. Talk to a guy in Oregon. He may have something to say about that. You're talking,
I'm
born and bred, baby. So I rep that LA, So.
Yeah. Might have to edit. I might get a lot of nasty messages for that one.
Maybe you'll get some samples, and that'll get somebody inviting you out saying, hey, try this. Let's do the Pepsi challenge over here.
Well, that's what I look to, right? I really look to the California market, and I view my job here in Canada as being one of the guys that brings that market here to Canada, and that's really one of our main goals. We're just coming online, so we're at as a company at this moment is we're actually sifting through our genetics right now. So our cannabis isn't on the market yet. We've been popping seeds and looking for those winners, and you know, kind of going through the flavor wheel. You know, we're going to go to market with gas, fruity, floral. You know, we want to have a little bit of one of each of those. We just have a great opportunity to come into the market, you know, a little bit later, a lot later than a lot of these big guys. But we have all these lessons learned, and by no means is the Canadian market satisfied at all, you know, within the legal infrastructure. So that information is all out there. So we just have to take our time and execute. And farming's farming, right? So, you know, you don't always get a good crop, and when you get a great crop, you got to lean into it and get it out there. And if your crop doesn't come out, or your strain doesn't perform the way you thought it was going to perform, or it doesn't come out the way you would have liked, you've got some important decisions to make on how you're going to put that out to market, or if you're going to put it out to market. So we're just going to take our time, man, and make sure we don't, you know, squander any of our consumers' trust as we enter the market. And that'll be basically throughout next year, 2020, we'll be awesome. Hitting New Brunswick and Alberta.
Awesome. Sorry for that. Mm-hmm. What's been the biggest challenge so far, Stuart Farmers face, and you know, what are you guys doing to overcome it?
Yeah, well, we just finished our phase one construction, so that was challenging. Construction is always challenging, yeah. And I've been in construction for 13 years, and you know, kind of lining up the regulations with what you're building, and cutting through the noise. You know, cutting through the noise has been a big challenge for me as an entrepreneur, and
yeah.
And understanding, you know, where to go and where to not go, and consultants. Oh my God, you know, working with the right advisors and consultants. You know, as soon as the cannabis industry was launched, everybody was a master grower. Everybody's a cannabis consultant, and everybody is the best at what they do. Lighting companies. Everyone has the best light in the world. Everybody. So I mean, it's all noise, right? So it's been really. It's really just been ensuring that we're working with the right people who have our best interest at heart. And you know, we've had some failures, but we've got some real wins, and you know, adapting quickly, right? In that respect, ensuring you're working with the right people. And if we have any, we brought in any of the wrong advisors or wrong consultants, we've had to cycle through them and kind of shift over to somebody else who would help us perform better. But yeah, ultimately focus. I mean, ultimately focus and just staying anchored. And I haven't succeeded at this 100% of the time by any means in the last 2 years, right? I've chased a few squirrels and got distracted a few times, and probably put some dollars in places that I wish I could get back now. But being aware of that as an entrepreneur and as a leader is kind of step number one. You know, I think the main thing cannabis entrepreneurs need to keep in mind is that this is the beginning of the industry that will be here forever. Mm-hmm. And it is not a race. You know, going public should not be the goal, in my opinion, of any operator. Building a sustainable company that profits with a great team that produces a great product. I think anybody who's just focused on that will succeed in the long term, you know, whether they're sustainably focused or not, you know, preferably they are. But if they're just focused on the long game and, you know, ignoring all this public market schmozzle, I mean, you guys are about to head into it. You know, Canada's public market bubble has burst and has been bursting for this last 3 months, right?
I've been hearing about it. Yeah. All the Canadians that I'm speaking to have been hearing about it a lot.
Yeah. And that's because most of, not all, like there are a lot of great companies in the Canadian LP world, but a really good chunk of them put together teams not to build a great company, they put together teams to take the company public, right? Yeah. And do a big IPO. And now the market is crashing and burning because of that. And a lot of these guys were just building speculation because the only thing that mattered was their stock price. And, you know, phase one of the Canadian cannabis industry, at least in the public markets, was completely based off of capacity, right? So it was all in 2015, 16, and 17, companies were just running around saying, well, we're building 1 million square feet of greenhouse. Oh, you're going to be worth this much money because you can produce this much cannabis and it's going to sell at $6 to $10 a gram. So you're worth $3 billion, right? But that was just construction, right? They were just building and taking on tons of overhead. So what you're seeing right now is an ungodly amount of cannabis in the Canadian market that companies can't sell.
Yeah,
because it's not good cannabis. And it's really hard to hire 300 farmers in a month and put them in a farming facility and have your plants do well, right? Yeah. And that's what you're seeing right now. I mean, the bubble is bursting. And you know, those who continue to stay focused on fundamentals and ignore the rat race, I think those are going to be the winners. And I think the same thing's about to happen in the U.S. I mean, as soon as you guys federally legalize, it may or may not be a repeat of what happened here in Canada. And at first it'll be valued on capacity and market reach and relentless press releases. And a few years later, when the dust settles, people will start looking at balance sheets, right?
Yeah.
So.
That's what happens. And, you know, what you said is, you know, spoken like, you know, true entrepreneur, you know, as opposed to kind of these, you know, like, let's call them businessmen for a second, or business people for a second, or just coming in and looking, like you said, pushing for to go public right away and looking for their quick exit, you know, and it just kind of it saturates the market first and foremost. And it also brings down the reputation of the market. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of brings it back to, you know, couple of years ago when there was this whole crypto boom and everybody has a coin and everybody has an ICO and, you know, initial coin off. And it's the same kind of thing, money getting pumped in there, people. And, you know, not to compare the two because we're talking about a real, you know, crop here and everything that's going on, but, you know, it just kind of like pumping money into something and expecting everything's going to work out when there's no SOPs in place, there's no system in place. There's no sustainability in place. There's nothing that's, you know, there's no expertise really. There's no experience there, you know? And like you said, you know, consultants. So, okay, cool. You bring in a consultant, you bring in somebody who has so-and-so X amount of experiences in that, and you bring in the wrong person. You give them a bunch of money, let them take over the company. And okay. And then where are you going to be in that case, you know? So it's definitely, like you said, the long-term, the long game. It's always about the long game. You know, it's always about game. And these kind of, you know, these kind of companies that end up, you know, kind of weeding themselves out, you know. And like,
yeah I think in, you know, 10 years we're gonna end up with an amazing industry, right? Yeah. But it's gonna be a rough 10 years, man.
It's war of attrition. Who can stay in there the longest, who can stick in there the longest? It's gonna have to do with passion. Who's passionate about enough about it. And not so much who has a deep pockets, because people can come in with deep pockets and, you know, and shoot themselves in the foot, so to speak, and then they're out. You know, so who's going to be able to stick around? Who's going to be able to get knocked down and get back up? And, you know, who's really in it to win it, you know, so to speak. So, so very good.
No, totally agree.
Yeah. And I wanted to shift gears real quick because I, you know, I also want to, you know, before I wrap up, I want to talk about, you have a lot of different interests. You know, I want to talk about, your movie, The Need to Grow.
Oh, yeah.
It just came out, huh? Can you talk about that for a second? And what's behind that, the motivation behind that? What's the message and your experience there?
Yeah, no, thanks, man. I'm glad you brought it up. So yeah, it's called The Need to Grow. I became an executive producer on that film about 6 years ago. What happened was I was looking at this innovative technology in Whitefish, Montana, that was designed by this starry-eyed scientist named Michael Smith. And these two filmmakers from LA had started following Michael as one of their environmental entrepreneurs that they were making this film on. So I got invited down there to watch this sizzle reel. And Rob Herring and Ryan Weirich, they showed me the sizzle reel, and they kind of gave me their pitch, and they said, you know, have you seen The Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore? And I said, yeah, I saw that movie. And they said, well, this is the opposite of that. This is a solutions-based film where we're going to follow real people and their journeys, entrepreneurs, activists, and show the world the resilience and passion and the work that people are actually doing out there, and we want to give the viewers hope as opposed to all problems, right? And you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, you have to be focused on solutions to get through every day. You can't dwell on your problems. So that was the best sales pitch they could have gave me. So I was instantly in. I became you know, one of their main executive producers at that moment. And the film is the anchor of the film is about soil, actually. So it's completely relevant to everything I'm doing now. It's about the importance of soil to the world, the difference between living soil and dead soil, the impact of big agriculture on the world, on climate change. But the story is told through the lens of these three superheroes, you know, as we call them: Michael Smith, the starry-eyed scientist; Eric Cutter, he's out of Orange County. We call him a renegade farmer. He turns parking lots into organic farms, and then a 7-year-old Girl Scout named.
Oh, they usually it's the other way around. That's great, you know, turning farms into parking lots.
Yeah. He shows up into parking lots, and he rolls out these Filtrix socks that are full of living soil, and he plants things in these socks, right? And just grows amazing food, and then Alicia Serratos. She's a 7-year-old Girl Scout, also from California, and her journey is fighting to get GMOs out of Girl Scout cookies. Ironically, there's a cannabis strain called GMO cookies, or
there's Girl Scout cookies.
You know. Yeah, I think it's GSC now. I don't think Girl Scouts America really likes that strain, but yeah. So Alicia's journey is fighting to get GMOs out of these cookies, and I'm a father now. You know, I got a 5 and 3-year-old. Her story is like especially impactful to me and inspiring. She was actually just marching with Greta Thornburg, if I'm saying her name right, at environmental rally down in Cali. So that was pretty neat. But anyways, and then we lucked out for, so we followed their lives for 3.5 years, right? So it became their journey of resilience, and they all hit tragedies in the film, and you know, and they find a way through them, and that's the message. And the message isn't, you know, we're doomed. The message is do what you can, you know, do anything, do what you can, do what you're passionate about, and just run with it. And then 4 years into the production of the film, so about 2 years ago, Rob and Ryan managed to get Rosario Dawson on board to narrate the film, which was just like one of the best things that could have happened. And, you know, they had one person on their list that they wanted to narrate this film, and that was Rosario.
Oh, wow.
Because she walks the walk and talks the talk. You know, she's a genuine.
She was on board. She loved it then.
Yeah, she watched the film finally. You know, it was email after email, you know, please watch the film. And then when she watched it, she fell in love with it, right? And then she threw her voice behind it. And she won a voice act. You know, we've been winning awards at film festivals for the last 2 years. She won a voice actors award for her part in the film. And yeah, we just recently had our premiere in LA, October 9th, gone by. Cory Booker was there with her, and you know, it was a packed theater. That was really cool. And yeah, now it's online. It's online on Vimeo, and it's online on Amazon. And you know, it's a great film. I think any entrepreneur should watch this film, especially any farmer should watch this film. I think everybody in the world should watch this film, because I'm very biased, but you know, but it's a great film. But it's a great film for entrepreneurs, and a great film for anybody in the cannabis industry to watch. And it's got a good message. So
great, you know. And talking about entrepreneurship, you know, that brings me to my next question. It's, you know, the classic Think Discussions question. You know, I have to ask every entrepreneur how you define success. You know, what does success look like for you?
You know, success for me is just loving what I do. You know, getting out of bed in the morning and loving the people that I'm working with. And of course now as a father, ensuring that, you know, I've got lots of energy, for my kids and for my family. So, you know, it's all the journey. You know, I've been a cash strap entrepreneur for 13 years and counting. If it wasn't about the journey and it wasn't about the passion, for me, you know, I would have been out year one.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's all about the love. You know, there's a lot of nights where you're overworking. There's a lot of questions, a lot of doubts that enter our brain, you know, as entrepreneurs, what's going on here? You know, the ups and downs, great times where like, holy crap, how am I going to keep this thing going? And then it just, you keep going, it works out, you know, but in the interim, you can't be waiting for that, you know, that goal, you know, so you have something to push you, of course, something that you need to, you know, but if it's all about external goals and when I reach this level and I reach that milestone or I reach this, like I said, you have to have goals to break you down. But if you're not loving it every single day that you're going in and out and you're showing up, it's just burnout, you know, burnout.
Yeah.
You know, and it's talk about sustainability. That is not sustainable. You know, it's
no.
You have to have a love for what we're doing all along the way in the journey, not just hoping to get somewhere. And then once that happens, then I will be success, you know.
Yeah, passion is fuel as far as I'm concerned, right?
100%. So very good. So, you know, what can we expect now? You know, I know this big year for you guys there at Stewart Farms. What can we expect for you in the future?
Yeah. So, I mean, really the next 2 and 3 years, you know, hopefully what you'll see is us entering the Canadian market with some great products, you know, from premium to standard products priced appropriately, that consumers can get behind and that ideally, when a California tourist or somebody at LA comes up to Canada and they go into that retail outlet, you know, we want them to gravitate towards the Stewart Farms product because that's the dankest shit on the shelf, right?
Yeah, I mean, that right, going back to before with the right awareness, with the right education, people will come in and say, let me get some of that aquaponics shit, you know. So I want that Stewart Farms. So
I want that Stewart Farms shit. Yeah, where's that Stewart Farms shit?
Very good. So cool. So as we're closed, you know, how can our listeners find out more about Stewart Farms, more about you, Tanner, and connect with you?
Yeah. You know, if you follow us on Instagram, Facebook, you know, LinkedIn, stewartfarms.life. Check out our website. So just stewartfarms.life. And then myself, tannerstewart.life. You know, both of them have YouTube, you know, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. And if just follow our journey, we'd really, really appreciate it. And that's all we can ask.
Very good. I really appreciate it. Excited for you. And everybody check out what they got going on, you know, follow the journey. It's all about that, you know, telling good stories. He's a filmmaker over here, executive producer, and he's also, you know, documenting their journey as they're growing. So exciting stuff coming on. So thanks a lot again, Tanner, for jumping on with us, and good luck to you for the rest of the year and beyond.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur and you know you need an uptake in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us. Plans start at $248. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com. That's CALACANN.com, and follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.